Maitreya. The sage Maitreya. Uvacha. Said. Tada. At that time. Sarvani. All. Bhutani. Personalities. Shrutva. After hearing. Medushtama. The best of the benedictors, Lord Shiva. Udatam, spoken by. Padatushta, being satisfied. Atmavihi, by heart and soul. Tata, my dear Vidura. Sadhu, sadhu. Well done, well done. Iti, thus. Ata apruvan, as we have said. Translation. The great sage Maitreya said, my dear Vidura, all the personalities present were very much satisfied in heart and soul upon hearing the words of Lord Shiva, who is the best among the benedictors. So you repeat, the great sage Maitreya said, my dear Vidura,
all
the personalities present
were very much satisfied in heart and soul
upon hearing the words of Lord Shiva, who is the best among the benedictors. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. In this verse, Lord Shiva is described as Medushtama, the best of the benedictors. He is also known as Ashutosha, which indicates that he is very quickly satisfied and very quickly angered. It is said in Bhagavad Gita that less intelligent persons go to the demigods for material benedictions. In this connection, people generally go to Lord Shiva, and because he is always quickly satisfied and gives benedictions to his devotees without consideration, he is called Medushtama, or the best of the benedictors. Materialistic persons are always anxious to get material profit, but they are not serious about spiritual profit. Sometimes, of course, it so happens that Lord Shiva becomes the best benedictor in spiritual life. It is said that once a poor Brahmin worshipped Lord Shiva for a benediction, and Lord Shiva advised the devotee to go to see Sanatan Goswami. The devotee went to Sanatan Goswami and informed him that Lord Shiva had advised him to seek out the best benediction from him, Sanatana. Sanatana had a touchstone with him, which he kept in the garbage. On the request of the poor Brahmana, Sanatan Goswami gave him the touchstone, and the Brahmana was very happy to get it. He now could get as much gold as he desired simply by touching the touchstone to iron. But after he left Sanatana, he thought, if a touchstone is the best benediction, why has Sanatan Goswami kept it with the garbage? He therefore returned and asked Sanatan Goswami, sir, if this is the best benediction, why did you keep it with the garbage? Sanatan Goswami then informed him, actually, this is not the best benediction, but are you prepared to take the best benediction from me? The Brahmana said, yes, sir. Lord Shiva sent me to you for the best benediction. Then Sanatan Goswami asked him to throw the touchstone in the water nearby and then come back. The poor Brahman did so. And when he returned, Sanatan Goswami initiated him with the Hare Krishna mantra. Thus, by the benediction of Lord Shiva, the Brahmana got the association of the best devotee of Lord Krishna and was thus initiated in the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay. So, Maitreya Vacha, Tadasa Ravani Bhutani, Shutra Medushtamo Dittam, Parikushtatma Vistata, Sarusad Viti Yata Pruvan. So, Om Ganatim Ananda Shag, Ranjana Shulakaya, Chakshuram Miritam Gena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, I was actually thinking about Lord Shiva's name is Ashutosh. Yeah, probably mentions that several times. Ashutosh, of course, means he who is easily pleased and he who is easily angered. Like the word tosh means really pleased. Like tushanti cha, ramanti cha in the Bhagavad Gita, you all know that word. Machata, madgata, pranat, puryantas cha, parasparam, katyantas jamam nichan, tushanti cha, ramanti cha. No one knows this verse? Anything. My devotees are always enlivening one another and discussing about my pastimes. In this way, they are enjoying and they are satisfied. Two things, enjoying and satisfied. Tushanti means that they're satisfied, and Ramanti means to enjoy, just like Radha Ramana Hari Govinda Jai Jai, you know, Radha Ramana Hari. Lord Krishna, who is the enjoyer of Radharani, Radharani is the enjoyer of Krishna. Anyway, so I was actually thinking about this Ashutosh quality of Lord Shiva, and I was thinking, why is he Ashutosh? You know, is it some psychological factor? It's like you see, sometimes see someone who is on edge. On edge means, you know, like if you just say the wrong thing, they'll just like yell at you, you know, just explode. And usually in the material world that occurs because someone has some repressed anger. I was talking to two devotees yesterday about this because we were talking about some conflict resolution. Like, you know, people somehow or other, they don't get to express themselves or whatever properly, then after a while, it explodes. You know, after a while, you know, it may seem all right for a while, but then after a while, they explode. So is it that Lord Shiva has, I'm just asking some rhetorical questions, is it that he has some like repressed anger or frustration and therefore he explodes very easily? I don't think so. Because Lord Shiva is Param Vaishnava. Lord Shiva is the topmost devotee of the Lord. So then I was trying to understand, like, why is this Ashutosh quality there? And then it actually was very easy to understand. Based on this verse from Bhagavad Gita, Nirmana Moha Jita Sangha Dosha Vyapa Nitya Vini Vritta Kama Dvandvara Vimuktara Sukaduka Sangha Kachancha Mudha Padamavyatat. This is actually given by Krishna in the Gita as the methodology to get out of the entanglement of the material world. This is from the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. The 15th chapter describes in the beginning the banyan tree with its roots upwards and branches down, you know, and nobody can figure out where it begins and nobody can figure out where it ends. Actually, there's a banyan tree is a very interesting example. I was just like studying the history of India, and it appears that when Alexander the Great first came to India, his whole army was able to camp under one banyan tree. And that's a Maha banyan tree. I guess they're not as big nowadays. But even in Fiji, you have these giant banyan trees that, you know, go for several acres like that. So that's like the material world. It's like a banyan tree. Because the banyan tree, I was reading the ethnological or the biological description of the banyan tree. What's that? You can do arti? What's that? That's better. Thank you. Thank you for your benediction. So, like the banyan tree, which you really can't tell where the roots are and where, you know, where the leaves are and where the branches, because the branches become roots and the roots become branches, you know. Just like in Hawaii, we have this big banyan tree in our yards. I think it's the biggest one in Oahu. And it just like, it's taken over, everything goes into the neighbor's yard and everything like that. It chokes off the water pipes in the neighbors. You know, it goes everywhere. The neighbors are very upset with us, and then it costs like thousands of dollars to trim the thing. Anyway, so the banyan tree is quite interesting. Anyway, so the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there's a description of the banyan tree as metaphorically, which is this material world. And then Krishna, of course, says you've got to cut it down with detachment. And then there's the injunction, Nirmana Moha Jita Sangha Dosha, the verse I just quoted. The one has to be free from false prestige, Nirmana, just like Lord Chaitanya says, what? Manina Manadena Kirtaniya said, or one has to be free from Amanina, you know, false prestige. Thinking, false prestige means profit, adoration, distinction. You know, you think that You're very wonderful, and we want people to appreciate you for it. And so, of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives the instruction how to become free. He says, manina manadena, by offering respects to others. That's how you become free from false prestige. And that Shikshashtika verse says, nirmana moha, free from illusion. Ajita sangha dosha, free from bad association. Avyatma nitya vinivritta kama, free from lust, established in the eternal aspect of the Lord. Vinivritta kama, dvandva vimukta, free from the duality. What is the duality? Duality is like I and mine in the material world, or happiness, and just said dvandva vimukta. That means liberated from duality. And Krishna gives the example in the Gita, sukha dukkha sangyar, known as. Sangyar means to be known as sukha dukkha, happiness and distress, sukha dukkha sangyar. Gachant yamuda, that unbewildered person. Amuda. Muda means like ass, or amuda means not ass. Gachant yamuda padam avyam ta. That person can enter into the spiritual world, padam. Of that, the step or going back to Godhead, avyayam tat, that unmanifested nature in the spiritual world. So anyway, so I was thinking this is actually the consciousness of a pure devotee. And also, I was thinking about other verses, especially from the Isopanishad, Ishavasham idam sarvam, yatkincha jagadam jagat, tena chaktena bunjada magrudha kashasvidhanam. Everything is owned and controlled by the Supreme Lord. So in other words, the Lord owns everything, he controls everything, and nobody else owns it. And the Lord actually owns you. So then I was relating that to Ashutosh. Because in this material world, we are not actually very Ashutosh, the rest of us. What does that mean? That we're not so easily pleased. You got to do a lot of things for us. And also, when we get angry, we may be easily angered, but we just hold on to it. It's not like Lord Shiva. As Ashutosh indicates, it's very easy for him to get to go from one emotion to another. But the rest of us, if someone makes us angry, we have these grudges that go on for like millions of years. Not only I'm not just speaking theoretically or jokingly. Like it's described, Prabhupada actually describes it. Sometimes people, husband and wife, or people who are enemies, they take birth as husband and wives, and they get even with each other, and that goes on for many, many, many lifetimes. I'm not saying everybody who's married is like that, don't quote me out of context. But, sometimes like animosities can take, or brothers, two brothers, or, a mother and her children, torturing her children, you got to become a doctor or something like that. So we have these tension-filled relationships, whether it's to enjoy ourselves or to get even with someone or enemies or something like that go on for long periods of time. And it's even described by Bhimsen. He had his long-cherished anger, just like a snake. When you trample a snake, there's actually stories about snakes following people when their mate was killed, they're following people, like in the airplane. They go into someone's baggage. And then someone in America opens up his baggage after a trip to India, and out pops a cobra, bites his and kills him. Anyway, so that's like long. It's like a trampled snake. It's interesting. Snakes usually don't attack people unless you actually kick them, or they feel threatened or somehow or other. So to trample them, they just go like that, and they attack you. Snakes are envious, but that's another issue. So we have this long-cherished anger towards people, these attitudes and everything like that. Whereas Lord Shiva doesn't have that attitude towards anybody. Because that's the friends and enemies type of concept. So when you don't have friends and enemies, and secondly, referring to the verse in Bhagavad Gita that I was quoting before, when you don't have a sense of possession, that anything belongs to you, then you can really, really be merciful to people because you're not getting anything out of it. As long as you think, you know, I'm getting something out of it, you know, something belongs to me, then mercy can't fully manifest because you're thinking, you're actually thinking of, you know, what you're going to get out of it. So therefore, you can't really be Ashutosh at that particular juncture. I was actually just listening to another, you know, seminar. Ajay Dwaitamaraj was giving a nice seminar about, his title of the seminar was called Unity and Perversity. Interesting seminar. So it was about religious movements and schisms and, you know, all sorts of interesting things like that, and the development of religious movements. And one discussion was that when the Acharya comes and starts a religious movement, whether it's Jesus Christ, Western religion, or Srila Prabhupada, you know, religion coming from India, then everyone's very enthusiastic and ready to sacrifice, you know, everything and not thinking of their own personal welfare. And then after that, you know, after he passes away, because there's not that charismatic personality anymore, then motives begin to become mixed. You know, people want some salary. I mean, just like I was in a temple and I was talking to the devotee, and I said, you know, what? How do you manage a temple? And they said, well, everybody's on salary. I said, well, what are the salaries? And, well, we get... I better not tell the currency or else it'll reveal the temple. But it was anyway, the equivalent of 15 minimum, you start out at a salary of like $14 an hour. You know, just translating the currency. $14 an hour, and then you work your way up according to your seniority, and then you check in. You know, you have to put in a certain amount of hours. So the devotees who were actually, you know, the congregation devotees were actually making some complaints about this system. They were talking to me. They said, well, the problem is that, what is the problem? Oh, yeah, the problem is that, you know, people just put in their hours and after that, that's it. You know, after 5 o'clock, they check out. And the congregation devotees were saying, well, we're actually working harder than that. Full-time devotees in the temple, because they were preparing for Janmashtami, so that means every night after work they were coming to the temple at 6:30 and then working till like 10. And so, anyway, so that's not to criticize anything, but you know, develops sometimes a fruitive mentality even religious life, and we see that of course in every institution. This is not a criticism specifically of ISKCON, but it definitely happens in every institution that people just, you know, have their jobs. Even if they're in the renounced order of life, you know, after a while it's their job, you know, they're getting their perks and everything like that, whatever the perks are, whether the perks are, you know, latest computer or the whatever. So it tends to be mixed. So then you develop a sense of, what I'm talking about is you develop a sense of possession. But we see that Lord Shiva, interestingly enough, exhibits an absolute sense of non-possession. He's walking around, you know, practically naked. It's not that he's worried about the latest outfit, you know, silk for his dhoti or anything like that. I mean, of course, we have to be careful not to go the other direction and start criticizing a poor sannyasi who happens to have more than six pairs of socks or something like that. Yesterday someone came to me and criticized one of my godbrothers. They said, he has almost 100 pairs of socks. And I said, huh? So what? I mean, it's not like Imelda Marcos, you know, with... I don't know if you remember Imelda Marcos. She had like, you know, thousands of pairs of shoes. You know, so what? You know, you get your foot bathed and people give you socks. That happens, you know. It's not that you're... I don't think anyone's going to stay in the material world because they're attached to socks. Yeah, I just want to stay here because, you know, I have my nice socks with the monograms on them. So, you don't want to get too far, you know, criticize a sannyasi for his socks, you know. That's a nice socks, Maharaj. But at the same time, you actually see Lord Chaitanya dealing with Sanatana Goswami when Sanatana Goswami had a nice chatter. It's really interesting. You know, he got this chatter from Srikant, his brother-in-law, and it was just like a beautiful new chatter. And Lord Chaitanya kept looking at it. And Sanatana Goswami finally got the message. Better trade it in. So he went to the Ganges and he saw an old Muslim mendicant with, you know, a patchwork chatter. And he said, "Please, let's trade." The Muslim said, "Are you crazy?" And Sanatana Goswami said, No. I'm merciful, you know, here." So they traded and he got this. And Lord Chaitanya was very happy about that. And then, you find Lord Chaitanya just like emphasizing a spirit of renunciation, you know, really intense renunciation with Raghunath Das Goswami. And he says, you know, as far as the sannyasi's duties, he says you should not think of women even in dreams. You should not wear fine clothes. It should not eat opulent foodstuffs. I mean, these are the basic instructions Lord Chaitanya gives to sannyasis. And of course, in one sense, I mean, we're all meant to become ultimately renounced like that. It's not to say that, you know, people should just like, everyone should start eating raw food. That's not the purpose of the talk. But, you know, vairagya vidya, you know, the renunciation or detachment. All right, so getting back to the point. So detachment only occurs when we understand Krishna owns everything. You can't become detached just by meditating on the negative, you know, like, let me become detached. I'm not, like Prabhupada commented on that one Mayavadi who said that about money, you know, I'm not interested in money. That's not detachment. He was just doing that, I mean, if I had to just role play or something with him, but he was just doing that because he wanted Prabhupada adoration distinction. So people would admire him for his so-called detachment, you understand? You know, sometimes like a sannyasi, you know, just like I'll exhibit extreme detachment, so people will say, "Maharaj, you're really detached." I think, wow, thank you for saying that. I feel real good about that. So is that actual detachment? I don't think so. I think that that's just, you know, substituting one type of attachment for another type of attachment, right? You know, instead of being attached to, you know, opulent food, I'm attached to the praises of everybody. You know, you're just like, "Oh, Maharaj, wow, it's amazing, wow. I'm amazing, isn't it wonderful?" So you really don't become detached by meditating on detachment or meditating on giving up things. So the methodology is actually just to think Krishna owns everything. It's a real simple thing. And that's Ishavasham. That's like Prabhupada said, that should be our motto. I mean, isn't it? Ishavasham idam sarvam. Everyone has a quota, but still, even your quota belongs to Krishna. You know, whatever you're given belongs to Krishna. That means it's meant to be used in Krishna's service, because if you use it, like Prabhupada gave the example, if a rich man gives you his car or something to use, and you use it for yourself, you go out to the bars at night with it, you're not going to get that car again. Or like if your father, you know, actually if your father lends you his car and then you misuse it, he's going to say you're grounded for a week. You ever have that experience? No. I had that experience. You're grounded. You know, I crashed my mother's car first time I drove it. Anyway, I was grounded. So that sense of complete non-possession, and Lord Shiva epitomizes that, he exhibits that particular sense. And it's interesting, another thing that's interesting is that the only person who can actually claim to possess things is Krishna. And Krishna does that. Krishna does the opposite in the Gita of what Lord Shiva does. Krishna says, you know, "Aham sarvasya prabho," everything comes from me. He says, the jiva soul is my part and parcel. Mami vangsa jiva loke. You know, so he's claiming all this possession stuff. It's really interesting. I was thinking the Gita, like Krishna's claiming so much possession. Bhoktaram, I'm the enjoyer. I'm the proprietor. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvalokamaheshwaram. I'm the Lord. Bhutanam isharam. Anyway, so you find that devotees will not claim proprietorship, but Krishna, that's a common denominator or characteristic of a devotee. He doesn't claim proprietorship over anything, whereas Krishna is always claiming proprietorship. And so Lord Shiva, how do we know, one way we know that he's actually a devotee is he never claims proprietorship over anything. Isn't it? He never claims proprietorship over anything. All, you know, people are offering him so much. It's different than the other demigods. The other demigods, people are offering and offering and offering. They're thinking, this is great. And they get angry if someone doesn't offer things to them. Isn't it like Indra getting angry? But Lord Shiva, here in this pastime, he's not angry because they weren't offering to him. He was angry out of compassion and also angry out of, as we mentioned before, because Sati, a devotee of the Lord, had been offended. Sati had, you know, left her body in such a horrendous way. It's a pastime, we understand. So Lord Shiva's anger was not impelled by a sense of possession. He's completely non-possessive, and therefore it's very easy for him just to drop the anger. You understand? That's the point about, that's the whole point of the class, Ashutosh. It's just very easy. Angry? No, not angry. So that's how you can test to see if someone's Ashutosh. If they don't drop the anger like that, you are not Ashutosh. Anyway, so you are not detached, because that means they're attached. You understand psychologically what's going on? It's actually very interesting, because I've always wondered, why is Lord Shiva Ashutosh? You know, it's definitely not a personality defect. But it has to do with his detachment from the material world and his attachment, understanding that everything belongs to Krishna. So that's all we have to do. Everything belongs to Krishna. And then you're perfectly detached in any situation. Even if, you know, if someone's married, his wife belongs to Krishna, husband belongs to Krishna, your computer belongs to Krishna, your watch belongs to Krishna, your body belongs to Krishna. Manasadeha, the Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of course, prays like that, isn't it? Manasadeha Geha, Yokishimur, Arpilam Tuya Pade, Nanda Kishore. Manasa, my mind, belongs to Krishna. Deha, my body. Geha, my paraphernalia, my home and everything. That all belongs to you. So this is actually the consciousness we need to develop. Then we'll be able to conquer anger very, very easily. It's not that we won't get angry, but we'll be able to conquer it like Lord Shiva. Vacho, Vega, Manasa. Oh yeah, just one final thing I want to mention. I was actually listening to a tape of Prabhupada where he exhibited this extreme detachment too, and understanding everything belonged to Krishna. It was a very interesting tape. It was in 1970. Of course, tape, it's not a tape. I don't listen to tapes anymore. MP3, sorry. So Prabhupada was leaving the United States. It was a heartbreaking tape because it was when Prabhupada was leaving and he was thinking maybe he wouldn't come back. And so Prabhupada was saying, I'm going now, and I may not come back. He said, I'm going to India. When Prabhupada went to India. So he said, I'm going to India, and we're going to start some temples. And then Prabhupada was describing, there's so many temples in India, so why do we have to start some new temples in India? And Prabhupada said, even though, just like Prabhupada gave an example, really interesting. He said, even though there may be overpopulation in this world, people, you know, then you still want to have your own child. But Prabhupada gave the example. That was really interesting. You heard that tape before?
Yeah, I heard that.
But it was a very short tape. It was like, oh, not tape, MP3. It was like 10 minutes. And Prabhupada said, even though there are so many, maybe overpopulation still, people should have their own children. And so Prabhupada said, we need temples in India for the Krishna conscious movement. So Prabhupada was just saying, you know, I may not come back. You know, it's not attachment, you know, I may not come back. And then Prabhupada was giving instructions, which he might have considered at that time his final instructions to his Western disciples. Prabhupada had health issues then, and also, you know, he wasn't so happy with some of the things that were going on in America. So Later on, he actually said that, it was Krishna who arranged that so he could start the movement in India. He actually just wanted to stay in America, but Krishna had another plan. That's what Prabhupada said. So he said, and then he said to the devotees, he said, if you follow certain principles, then you will always be Krishna conscious. And the principles he gave were actually from the Nectar of Instruction. By Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī. He quoted this verse, Utsaha nisya dharya tatat karma pavartanat sangas chagat sato vrite sadvira bhakti prasidyati. And he gave a little bit different translation for this verse. He said, Utsaha nisya dharya tatat karma pavartanat. He said, if you always remain enthusiastic, first of all, he said, you should always remain enthusiastic. Utsan nischayad dharyat. And you should be patient. And then, utsan nischayad dharyat. Then, you should be determined. Of course, he didn't use the determined, he used faith or something like that. Steady and faith like that. So you should have so he gave, this whole verse from the Upadeshamrita. Utsahan nischayad dharyat. Tatat karma bhart. Always follow the rules and regulations. Rise early. Prabhupada was just giving you the basic for staying in Krishna consciousness, which many people have forgotten nowadays. Utsaha nisya, isn't it? I mean, it's just like, what movement did I join? So, utsaha nisya dharya, tatat karma bhart. Sangas jagat. Prabhupada presented that in the positive. He said, always take good association. Sangas jagat means to give up bad association. So Prabhupada did the positive of that, which is to actually take good association. And then satovrite, normally we understand that as, following the footsteps or serving the saints, but Prabhupada translated that a little bit different. He said, don't be diplomatic or don't be political, and you should have an occupation that's honest. So in other words, cultivate the mode of goodness. So in other words, Prabhupada was giving these instructions in sort of a detached way, so like I'm leaving, I may not come back, and if I don't come back, you can maintain your Krishna consciousness like this. Simply concerned with the welfare of his disciples and in the movement. Very interesting. Anyway, so just something I wanted to throw in there as far as detachment. So any questions or comments? Yeah. Yeah. That's the hard part. But at least it should start from the intellectual perspective. Actually Prabhupada said, action and knowledge brings realization. So in other words, I'll give you an example. When I was a young brahmachari, I was very attached to a tape recorder. At that time we had tape recorders. And there were two sannyasis, and very few people had tape recorders. They asked me, can we have your tape recorder? And I was feeling a pain in my heart. Like this extreme, agony, I was having some sort of breakdown, appendix attack or something like that. That's not my heart, my stomach. But anyway, and then I said, I closed my eyes. I said, nothing belongs to me, take it. And so, that's action and knowledge. So actually, that's the intelligence platform, the buddhi. Like Buddha Yoga. So you act in knowledge, and then somehow or other I got some realization. Then I got a touchstone. No, I wish I did. Anyway. So that's how you get realization. Yes. That shows faith. If we just act on the intellectual platform, that shows that we have faith in the knowledge. And if you have faith, yasya devi parabhakti yata devi tatakuru, kashayate katata yata prakashante mahabhana, everything's revealed to you.